one of the key things that's different this time is the openness and transparency of the process.
Governor Parnell talks about the gas line deal and other legislative priorities. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 22nd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the Coast Guard makes plans to patrol the Arctic and Alaska's western coast.
Next summer, we're going to kind of have to keep our foot in both places because the threat remains in both places.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation CEO Gene Peltola Sr. spent this past weekend clearing out his office. The board of directors dismissed him without publicly explaining the decision. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Peltola announced his expected retirement January 10th. He said he'd work through April. But just days later, YKHC's board of directors told him to leave immediately. The board is not speaking publicly about the issue. Their decision came in a closed executive session. In a release, the board said they bought out the remainder of Peltola's contract and his early retirement was effective immediately. They wouldn't comment to KYUK, but referred to a statement where board chair Ray Ahlstrom thanked Peltola for his years of service. A few days before the board meeting, none of the controversy was apparent in a lengthy interview with Peltola when he called the board excellent. Peltola, who is Yupik, sat in his office overlooking the Kuskokwim River. He reminisced about how YKHC has changed since he took it over in 1990. Back then, the corporation was going through tough times. 3 dozen staff had been laid off, and most of the director positions were vacant.
And immediately, I was able to fill those positions with quality people and competent people. And that was the crux of the turnaround of the corporation.
YKHC's annual budget was between $10 and $11 million then. Now it's $175 million. YKHC's board has hired Chief Legal Counsel Dan Winkleman to replace Peltola, someone Peltola had been grooming for the job. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
GovTrack, a nonpartisan website that collects data on proposed federal legislation, has completed its 2013 report card on members of Congress. It found Alaska's Mark Begich co-sponsored more bills than any other senator, while Congressman Don Young introduced more bills than any other House Republican. But the report card was especially interesting for what it said about U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
A lot of interest groups put out report cards that judge lawmakers by a few key votes on issues they care about. GovTrack, on the other hand, looked at all bills sponsored and co-sponsored in 2013. The site's founder is Joshua Tauberer.
In whole, we hope it tells a useful story about how your members of Congress are spending time in the Capitol and what they're doing, but it's not meant as any particular, no score is meant as a single judgment about whether they're a good or bad legislator.
His scorecard shows Senator Murkowski is one of the most bipartisan members of the Senate, aligned closely with moderate Republican Susan Collins of Maine. Murkowski co-sponsored more bipartisan legislation than any senator other than Collins. And when it comes to ideology, Collins and Murkowski were next to each other, anchoring the far left of the Republican spectrum. But when you look at the Senate as a whole, Collins is in the middle and Murkowski just right of center. Tauberer says the ideology score tends to sort lawmakers from liberal to conservative, but it's really looking at patterns of association, not values.
The score is computed from a completely automated statistical machine algorithm that looks at how similar each member of Congress's bills that they co-sponsor are to other bills that other members are co-sponsoring. And it doesn't actually even look at the words in the bill. It just looks at who else is co-sponsoring those bills.
Among Senate Democrats, Mark Begich ranks right of center on the ideology score amid a pack of Western state senators. Murkowski spokesman Matt Felling says he wonders about the margin of error when translating data into ideology, but he thinks the report card is a reflection of Murkowski's pragmatism.
This study does clearly indicate that Senator Murkowski sees the value in having conversations across the aisle in a way that I think a lot of Alaskans and a lot of Americans would find refreshing, because all we tend to see on television are people digging in their heels or standing on one side of the room with the other guys on the other side like a sixth-grade sock hop.
While GovTrack did not look at votes, a separate Washington Post database also confirms Murkowski's independent streak. It shows Murkowski voted with the majority of her party only 61% of the time last year, less than any other Republican senator except, again, Susan Collins. Begich voted with most of the Democrats 93% of the time, which puts him at about the median in the Senate on party alignment. On the House side, the Post database says Don Young voted with Republicans 88% of the time, less than most of his colleagues. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Coast Guard Admiral Thomas Ostebo visited Nome last week to outline summer plans for Western Alaska. The plans are a part of the Coast Guard's Alaska operation for the year, officially titled Arctic Shield 2014. Anna Rose MacArthur reports from KNOM in Nome.
Nome should expect a regular stream of Coast Guard ships pulling in for supplies, fuel, and crew changes. Expected vessels include buoy tenders and cutters, particularly the Alex Haley. In Barrow, the Coast Guard will station a buoy tender and a national security cutter offshore. Also, they will open an emergency response helicopter facility to aid industries and communities in the North Slope. If Shell Oil Company receives its drilling permits for the Chukchi Sea, a Coast Guard ship will remain on the drill site at all times. In Kotzebue, the Coast Guard will use the air facility on an as-needed basis for deployment and crew swaps. In Port Clarence, the Coast Guard will port a patrol boat to monitor the Bering waters, respond to offshore incidents, and aid local vessel boardings. In addition, the Coast Guard will conduct disaster and oil spill response training in communities along the western coast.
So you can expect to see a lot of Coast Guard folks again. Hopefully that's a good thing.
While in past years the Coast Guard focused either on the Arctic or on Alaska's western coast, Ostebo says this summer the Coast Guard will be patrolling both areas.
Next summer we're going to kind of have to keep our foot in both places because the threat remains in both places.
That threat stems from potential accidents like vessel collisions, oil spills, and situations requiring search and rescue. Ostebo's top concern is the unregulated increase of vessels through the Bering Strait. This traffic overshadows even the risk associated with oil and gas extraction. Last year, Ostebo says, the Bering Strait saw the highest number of ship and cargo passage in the Strait's history, and the Coast Guard expects an even higher rate this year.
When we have as much traffic as and the increase in traffic that we're seeing take place in the Bering Strait, two ships colliding with each other, a ship running aground on Little Diomede, a ship losing power or having a fire or those kinds of things are really the biggest concerns that I have as I look to the threats in this area, and the Coast Guard needs to be here to support that.
Ostebo says the Coast Guard and its Russian counterpart are drafting voluntary regulations for vessel routing and reporting through the strait. Reporting from KNOM in Nome, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A federal appeals court has ruled that federal regulators conducted inadequate environmental studies before selling $2.7 billion in petroleum leases off Alaska's northwest coast. The decision could affect leases acquired in 2008 by Royal Dutch Shell in the Chukchi Sea. The company is considering additional exploratory drilling there this year. A three-member panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in a split decision today that federal regulators prepared an environmental assessment based on recovery of just 1 billion barrels of oil. Earth Justice Attorney Eric Graffy argued the case for the plaintiffs.
The agency has to reconsider the lease sale, whether to hold the lease sale, whether it should open the Chukchi Sea to oil and gas drilling leases, in light of that new analysis that takes a proper look at the potential environmental impacts.
Appeals court judges said the environmental assessment should have been based on a full range of likely production. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Pebble Mine opponents rally in Dillingham to send a message to Washington, D.C.
We are ready for action from Washington, D.C. to permanently protect our watershed.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD. Paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Governor Parnell says he has three main priorities for the legislative session that started yesterday in Juneau: education, the gas line, and the unfunded PERS TERS pension fund liability. Parnell told APRN's Lori Townsend the budget will be tight this year, but Alaskans have been through that before.
Because our budget is dependent upon oil revenues and the price of oil goes up and down, historically we've always used those savings to buffer those lower price times. That's the situation we're in right now. So we need to be restrained and we need to be prudent about those investments we make. We want to make them count. And so we're going to focus on those constitutional priorities. We're going to focus on education, on public safety, on transportation. But we're also going to work at those systemic, make those systemic changes so that our kids down the road don't have their education budget squeezed by an unfunded pension liability payment like we do today. So instead of paying $1.1 billion to fund that pension liability obligation some years from now, I'm going to propose a way forward where they're paying $500 million in those years ahead. So it's about keeping our eye on the future, but making those important investments for today.
The new gas line agreement you recently signed has the state taking an equity share in the pipeline. You've talked about this as a new idea, but when we look back to the days of Governor Murkowski's administration, there were similar ideas. What makes this deal different than that proposal?
Quite a few things are different in this proposal, but I do believe fundamentally, like many governors before me, that Alaska can better control its destiny and better own its destiny if we own a stake in this gas line. What's different this time is that there will be more public process, more transparency to it. So instead of having one legislative session where the fiscal deal is done at once, billions of dollars are put at risk at once, we move through stage gates or phases of this project just like companies do all the time. So for example, the next 18 months, what is known as pre-FEED, the pre-front-end engineering and design work, that's what these agreements address. It allows us to move forward in an aligned fashion on a gas line, but only through that first stage. Once that pre-FEED stage is done, we come back to the legislature, show what's gone before, show the new agreements that have been negotiated for the next stage, known as FEED, get approval and the legislature's commitment after a public process. So one of the key things that's different this time is the openness and transparency of the process and the less risk to Alaskans along the way.
You've hinted at an education proposal that would be more supportive of expanding the charter school system. How does that help communities off the road system?
Well, because anytime you put money into the hands of parents or anytime you loosen the restrictions on charter school creation, that opens opportunities to parents in rural areas and in urban areas. There's just no question. And in fact, some of our charter schools are in the rural areas. So the issue really is one of giving charter schools, which are part of the public school system, giving them and their students equal treatment with the rest of the public school system.
You graduated from East High in Anchorage. If you had young kids that were about to enter the Anchorage public school system, would you feel okay about their education given the extensive cuts the district has made and will continue to make?
You know, that really is dependent upon each parent. And for our kids, we had our kids in both public schools during their K through 12 grades, and we had them in a private Christian school as well. So we had that ability to choose. For somebody who doesn't have that ability, I say we have to do better so that they have more opportunity as young people in our schools. And I think the question you ask is a good one. You know, it's pretty tough it's pretty tough to say that the funding hasn't been increased from the state, but I think because it has, but I think we have to deal with the fundamental structure that we put money into and say, are we getting, are our kids getting value for the dollars we're spending? And in some cases, I think they are, and in some cases they're not. That again is a huge debate that's going to be had here in the halls of the legislature and throughout the state as we move forward. It's not just about how much money we can spend. It's about how that money gets spent. And those are two sides of the equation that I intend to bring together in Juneau for the benefit of our kids.
Governor Sean Parnell speaking to APRN's Lori Townsend. To see a transcript of a longer version of this interview, go to alaskapublic.org. Parnell will give his State of the State speech tonight at 7. Many public radio stations will carry live coverage of his address. Representative Beth Kurtula's new position will be the first for an elected official at the Stanford University Center for Ocean Solutions. The center is a collaboration of marine research organizations connected with Stanford. KTOO's Rosemarie Alexander has more.
For the past 15 years, Beth Kurtula has been advocating for her district, her state, her party. Now she'll be in a nonpartisan position.
I'll have to learn those boundaries.
The Center for Ocean Solutions wants that legislative background, says Executive Director Meg Caldwell. She is also Director of Stanford Law School's Environmental and Natural Resources Law and Policy Program. Caldwell says Kurtula will be the only visiting fellow at the center with the views, insights, and experience of a state lawmaker.
We can't replicate that here. That's an incredible sort of resource for us.
Before she ran for office, Kurtula worked for the state of Alaska on oil, gas, and other coastal issues in the Attorney General's office. She says that coastal experience cannot be overestimated.
A critical piece of understanding a lot about the way our nation treats oceans and the ability to bring that information back then to other policymakers was really the key in terms of my going back to Stanford.
Other fellows at the center are scientists. Caldwell says Kurtula's background as a legislator will help make their research more useful to decision makers.
Beth is going to be able to help us understand the perspectives of decision makers in elected positions and the unique challenges and constraints that they have and how we can be more effective in engaging with them, in sharing our research findings.
Kurtula describes her role as a conduit between legislatures and science policymakers, bringing them together to discuss coastal and ocean issues. Years ago, she pushed the first cruise ship pollution bill through the Alaska legislature, and at the time, it was the toughest in the nation. She's continued to work on coastal legislation.
One of the frustrating things for me has been the lack of information and science that we get at the legislative level. So my hope is to sort of be this interface between policymakers, scientists, and be able to help us get great answers for what happens for our ocean.
Not only is Alaska the largest state in the nation, it also has thousands of more miles of coastline.
And with Alaska, I mean, we are the ocean for the country. And with the Arctic opening, these issues just really have gone to the forefront.
Kurtula's fellowship at the Stanford Center for Ocean Solutions begins February 3rd. At the end of the first year, she has an option to renew for a second year. Then she says she will bring back to Alaska a new perspective on ocean policy that will certainly have an impact on the state. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
The pollock trawl fleet now has a device that could help avoid catching too many salmon. It's what's called an excluder and has been in development for more than 10 years. The design was presented at the Marine Science Symposium meeting in Anchorage. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Many in the marine conservation community have been skeptical of the trawl industry's professions that it could find better designs for trawl gear, such as gates and wheels that are not so destructive to the bottom and excluders that might let salmon out of the nets but keep pollock in. But after experiments with tubes and trap doors and speed variations that pulled the nets up into waters with even more salmon and grids that tore the nets and other problems, John Govan of the Marine Conservation Alliance was able to make this announcement in a keynote speech to open the Marine Science Symposium.
And I will sort of scoop the punchline here. We do now have an excluder that has been shown to reduce the Chinook bycatch by 25 to 35%. And we even have another design coming online where the Chinook bycatch is reduced by 40%.
Govan said the current excluder design works well with Chinook, but not so well with chums. But the new design works with chums as well. The device is placed in the net near the end and works by creating an eddy that salmon are strong enough to swim out through, but pollock are not. The key for increasing the chum escapement turned out to be an opening under the trawl net as well as an opening at the top of it.
Over and under excluder allows escapement both out the top and out the bottom. This is done by a weighted panel on the top and a floated panel on the bottom, effectively allowing a double pathway. We're thinking Chinooks will go out the top and chums will go out the bottom. We got this thing. And our performance results so far with this have been 40% Chinook escapement, 20% chum escapement. For the Bering Sea, the pollock loss rate has been a fraction of 1%.
Govan had videos from cameras placed right in the net that showed the salmon getting out while the pollock were pushed back by the current. The trawl fleet's bycatch of Chinook in the Bering Sea hit a peak of 120,000 fish in 2007, but has been down since then. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council imposed a hard cap in the Bering Sea in 2009 that can shut down fishing if too many Chinook are intercepted. The council has not done the same thing for chum salmon. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
The Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance did not agree with the Lieutenant Governor's decision this month to not allow its proposed ban on commercial set netting on the 2014 ballot. They're taking their case to court. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has more.
The alliance assembled some of its directors and staff in Anchorage Wednesday morning to announce it was challenging Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell's decision. The group's legal counsel, Matt Singer, said the lieutenant governor's decision was unconstitutional.
I want to be clear, the decision by the lieutenant governor and the opinion by the attorney general on which the lieutenant governor relied, they're wrong. They're wrong on the law. And their decision, should it stand, is a dangerous precedent for Alaska.
The lieutenant governor agreed with the attorney general that the proposed set net ban amounted to a reallocation of fish. Those decisions cannot be made by the public through a voter initiative, but the alliance maintains the proposal is a conservation measure. It only asks that set nets be taken out of the water. How the fish are appropriated after that is up to the Board of Fish, but Singer says there's not much confidence in how they do that.
Because the Board of Fish hasn't conserved kings, and the voters have a right to express their will.
Severe restrictions to both commercial and sport fisheries the past 2 years have allowed king salmon to meet their escapement goals, but by a relatively thin margin. And this year doesn't look much better. The final decision about the legality of the alliance's voter initiative will be made in Alaska Superior Court in Anchorage. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The atmosphere was festive last night at the Dillingham Boat Harbor as dozens came to celebrate some recent successes in the fight against the pebble mine. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
President Obama, protect Bristol Bay.
9-year-old Arianna Woods of Dillingham had the message pretty well nailed down at Tuesday's Protect Bristol Bay bonfire rally.
Yeah. All right, everybody, we're going to get this party started.
And a party it was. Against the backdrop of a beautiful sunset, dozens turned out for food and fun. United Tribes of Bristol Bay's Alana Hurley.
We are out here today to send the message to Washington, D.C., to the EPA, to President Obama, that Bristol Bay is ready to be protected. We are ready for action from Washington, D.C. to permanently protect our watershed.
Those who have been leading the fight against the pebble mine say the momentum of the battle seems to have stayed in their favor since the departure of Anglo-American from the Pebble Partnership last September. The EPA's watershed assessment left little room for the compatibility of mining and salmon in Bristol Bay, at least in the federal government's view. And this week, Senator Mark Begich took a firm position against the pebble mine. Still, as Dillingham's Gary Klein said to the crowd, the fight isn't over.
We are not done yet. The science is in, but now what's the EPA going to do with it? Hopefully, keep telling them to invoke the 404C of the Clean Water Act.
Speaker after speaker reiterated the message that those fighting the pebble mine won't rest until someone puts regulatory protections against mining in place for the world's largest sockeye salmon fishery.
We want our subsistence way of life to be here for our future generations, for our children.
That was Gayla Hosseth. Hosseth was one of a handful Tuesday who braved a polar plunge into the bay's icy waters.
What's going to make you get that freezing cold water today?
Because our water is important to us here in Bristol Bay, and we want to show EPA how important it is to us.
Protect Bristol Bay!
Hosseth and the other swimmers were joining with a dozen or so who did the same in a sister rally in Naknek over the weekend. Tomorrow, Washington Senator Maria Cantwell is scheduled to hold a rally with Bristol Bay fishermen in Seattle. No word yet on if that's to include any Puget Sound swimming. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and Dave Benninger in Dillingham. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.